Contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all given up podcasting to extend the pathetically short Wikipedia page on Linux format. This is episode 22 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
Thanks, guys.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I am Mike Saunders.
And in this episode of the podcast, we are talking Chrome OS. The first alpha code is here, and Fedora 12, of course. We're reporting back on the sound of found and our open ballot. If some big sites were paid to not use Google, would you switch? Don't forget, you can subscribe to our magazine and give us all money to buy sweeties with at tinyurl.com/podcastlxf.
Fact times importance equals news, they tell us. And Chrome OS has not officially been released, but you can now get the source code to it, and you can get VMware disk images.
You can.
And the like. This is Google's operating system initially designed for netbooks and primarily for machines that will just be used for internet browsing.
We were all really excited about it.
Yeah,
we're
blown away.
Yeah, well, I was watching the Twitter feed and all that.
Twitter, eh?
Yeah, Chris de Bono was saying how great it was at the time, as it happened.
So this is a Linux kernel with an X server on top and then the Chrome browser, by the looks of it. You've tried it, Paul, haven't you?
I have. I compiled it from source as it was released.
Wow, that's hardcore.
Yeah, it's basically Ubuntu with a full screen Chrome.
So
without a window manager, presumably.
Well, yeah, you can't change windows, and it's a bit disappointing, to be fair. I did think you kind of expect Google to have some awesome in there somewhere, and there's a distinct lack of awesome in this release. It is just a full screen Chrome browser, but I've got to admit their build scripts are awesome. You just run the build script, wait 10 minutes, run the next one, wait 10 minutes, run the next one, wait 10 minutes, and it all just works.
Could somebody make a meta package and a script to de-Ubuntuify Ubuntu and turn it into Chrome OS?
I think, I know it's obviously not true, but it seems very much like that's what they've done.
Right.
Because when you're doing the build script, it says things like, you know, downloading the kernel patches we've made and then adding them to the default Ubuntu kernel and then building it. So there are some changes made behind the scenes, but it's pretty small.
Right.
And it is for the Atom.
But how's the performance? How's the boot speed? I mean,
it's about 7 seconds, 8 seconds.
So it's very, very fast.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, wow. And they've written their own BIOS for their laptops to boot even faster on those actual hardware.
Who's going to make the hardware?
Well, that's it. It has to be Google certified hardware.
Right.
It's designed to run on specific hardware, only SSDs, for example.
Yeah, yeah. SSDs with 512K of storage.
Yeah, it makes sense. If you can control the platform, you can do much more with it, as Apple has shown us quite well.
Yeah, but unlike Apple, it sounds like their source code works.
Yeah, well, the source is open for a start, which is very helpful.
Yeah.
But large chunks is just Ubuntu.
I think it's a good idea, you know, and I know it's not the bling that everybody was expecting and what Google will do and what they have done in the past. But, you know, if you look at most people using netbooks, most of them have got a browser on, open, full screen all the time. And what difference is it going to make to them? They're going to have a much better performance.
Yeah, I mean, this is the exact kind of operating system I'd like to install on my parents' PC. With some VoIP stuff as well, but
they'll handle the VoIP with Google Talk.
With Google Talk, of course, yeah. But that's perfect, you know. Nothing can go wrong. Then they can't resize Windows. My mum sometimes phones up and saying the window's gone too small. I have to explain where to grab it and resize it. And the whole concept of Windows is pretty foreign to her anyway. The fact that you get these pop ups everywhere. So
I think they're onto something, and I think they'll give the netbooks away for free.
Me too, I agree.
So when you get a pop up then with Google Chrome, Does the pop up occupy the whole screen?
I don't know. In Chrome OS, how does it work?
Presumably,
I didn't get any.
You look at different pages using tabs.
Pop up blocker, even. It's all tabs. Yes,
tab Chrome does block them anyway.
Yeah, Chrome blocks them.
Blocker.
So you don't really get pop ups in the first place.
How do you think they'll be able to give them away for free then? What sort of model?
Vast amounts of Google Ads.
Yeah,
because everything on there is Google Ad based. You go to Gmail, you see Google Ads. Go to anywhere else, you see Google Ads.
What if you bought one and used Hotmail?
Of course, it relies on people staying with Google. Mm. But empirical evidence seems to suggest that people want to go to Google.
People
go
do that anyway, yeah.
So you could get a free netbook with Chrome on it and then install Ubuntu Netbook Remix.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like Graham says, the netbook will likely only have one byte of storage space, because Google is deliberately constraining these devices. It needs, you know, some network access.
To install Ubuntu on there.
That's
whatever,
it, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
And, you know, Google will get their money back. Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow. In 20 years' time.
And for the rest of
the clouds of Mordor.
Yeah, the thing is, Google makes such an obscene amount of money from their search advertising.
Mm.
I think it's 3.5 billion profits they make.
Billion!
I know, it's a huge. And that's a recession too. It's obscene.
Yeah.
So they are very happy to give laptops away at this point.
I don't think this recession actually happened. You know, Apple's making record profits on very expensive computers. Mm. You know, I think it's all just a lie. Anyway.
Our bonus packages have been very generous this year.
that's true. Yes.
They have, haven't they? Yeah. I was very grateful for not getting a rise. I'd have just felt guilty walking out in the streets.
You see, if you subscribed, we would get a rise for
yes,
a change.
Please subscribe to Linux format. Moving on, Fedora 12 was released. Which is great. It's faster.
One better than 11.
It's one better than 11 and almost 13. It's bluer, yeah. It's more hatty. And a couple of the things that that intrigued me about this is that the Presto plugin for Yum is included by default. And what this means is when you download package updates, it only downloads the bits that have changed from
right,
the previous.
A delta of
a delta, exactly. A binary diff. So, you know, when some random open office bug fix comes out, you don't have to download 100 megs of packages.
Welcome to 2001.
Yeah.
I bet your mum and dad are pleased about that particular edition. the first feature.
It's surprising that it has taken so long, and hopefully more distros will take it up. And Fedora 12 is now fully optimized for 686 class CPUs. Finally. Yes.
Welcome to 1997. Yeah. That was Pentium Pro, wasn't it? 686?
686. 586 Pentium. 686 Pentium Pro, yeah. So,
or Pentium 2 for consumers.
Fedora 12 will run great on your Pentium Pro machine.
Or higher. I mean, I know it makes a big difference, but for goodness sake, we are going so slowly in some places. Mm. It's pathetic.
Well, there's two flags for GCC when you optimize, isn't there? There's Tune, or there was Arch.
M-Tune.
M-Tune and M-Arch something. So they've always been kind of semi-optimized for 686, but using 386 instructions. So for your 2 gigahertz 386 box that we all have, it would still run. I mean, the main thing is they stuck with 386 for alpha compatibility, so they run on, you know, random Cyrix chips and VIA chips and that business.
What hero of classical antiquity is this one named after?
It's a good question.
Constantine.
I don't know. Is it?
Well, that's nice.
I really like kernel mode setting.
Kernel mode setting.
Because it's in there for NVIDIA and ATI and Intel. So no matter which graphics card you have, you get a smooth boot up.
Right. Unless, of course, you're booting in VirtualBox, which boots in text mode.
You get flickering and everything. Yeah. It doesn't seem to quite be working as people promised as yet.
Yeah.
But the promise is there, and, you know, I'm feeling hopeful about it anyway.
It's enabled for certain Radeon and GeForce and Intel chips, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I like that Moblin is bundled as well.
It is.
Which is cool.
You can install Mandriva?
Yeah, and Mandriva, we should say. But the great thing about Moblin on those distributions is, unlike Intel's version, you can add tons and tons of packages.
Not locked down.
Yes.
Wow.
Which is great.
And it's got Bluetooth audio.
Bluetooth audio?
Which apparently works out of the box.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that. Audio Linux out of the box. Yeah, what box? I have a coffee.
See, behind the scenes, folks, yesterday we were discussing features for the next issue of the magazine. And I suggested to Graham we should write Pulse Audio, all your problems solved. Graham politely refused.
I didn't refuse. I said it probably wouldn't fit in with the all newbie beginner's guide that you were thinking it would be.
Well, yeah, it certainly wouldn't fit in 4 pages, that's for sure. Yeah.
And finally, this is quite a big one. Ubuntu 10.04 is being planned, and it's not going to have the GIMP. They are going
on
to
the live CD.
Yes, it will still be available in the package repositories, but the belief is that GIMP is too powerful, too complex. And, you know, most people on the desktop want to trim some photos, rotate them.
Take some red eye off.
Take some red eye off and do trivial stuff like that. And they don't need all sorts of filters. So what do we reckon?
That is great.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Who doesn't agree? I agree.
I don't, because I agree with all the whole sentiment of that. GIMP is really complicated. But I think GIMP is a good advert of how much money you can save with open source. If you give someone Ubuntu and they install it and you say, look at this program, you might not want it, you might not need it, but look, this is the kind of stuff that comes with Linux, a very powerful, featureful graphics editing tool.
I think it's exactly the opposite, actually.
Yeah, that's why
Linux is bad. Look at the GIMP. It's completely unusable.
It's not unusable.
This
is
what you get for free. Something vastly complicated and impossible to understand.
And unsurprisingly, the only person who thinks it should stay is you, who can actually use the GIMP.
I do use
the GIMP. I can't figure the damn thing out. I've used it so many times. Each time it confounds me with its stupid user interface.
I don't particularly enjoy using it. No. But I've been using it for 8 years. So I'm just kind of got, sixth sense of where everything is in it.
I think F-Spot and Digicam are so much better for the vast majority of people, and why confuse the issue by putting two similar kind of editing packages in the main distribution? We all install tons of stuff after we've installed Ubuntu. You know, what difference does it make? I think for most people, will know of the GIMP, or they'll find out about the GIMP and they can install it themselves.
So what next? OpenOffice? Chuck that out? Have Abby work?
Yeah, I'm all for that. Yeah. And anyway, there's the Mic Super Disc that's bound to include the GIMP.
Mic Ubuntu.
I'm curious, though, because it frees up quite a lot of space, I expect. What are they going to fill it with? More wallpapers.
Yeah, more boot-up sounds.
More naked people.
Naked people.
They're all gone now, haven't
they?
All gone. Space pics, yeah.
Nelson Mandela interviews.
Also, F-Spot is mono-based, which would mean if mono's ever yanked, thanks to the mono-haters, GIMP would have to make a return.
Or switch to KDE.
Yeah. Occam's Razor, GIMP comes back.
Lol, woof.
And it's a shame, because it's just about to go to single window mode, too.
When it does, maybe consider bringing it back, because that's what it needs.
Or they could just pay however much, $10,000, I don't care what it is, just to get a UI consultant in for a week, 2 weeks, I don't care, and get him to redesign the damn thing. It can't be hard, surely. It can't be hard.
Well, do you think Photoshop is any good?
No, I don't think Photoshop
is. Isn't that where they're taking all of their
probably,
leaf
yeah.
Like Photoshop circa 1997.
I think they should still have a little paint tool in Ubuntu, something like MT Paint. They should chuck in, because kids like to play around with it. It's good if you just need to do a doodle.
Do kids like to play around with it?
I did as a kid.
Do kids like to play around with GIMP?
Yes. Daddy, where's the layer button?
Yeah, they've got TuxPaint anyway, haven't they? TuxPaint's good.
You can do all sorts of stuff with cheese, can't you? You can take photographs and do funny colours to stuff.
Isn't K-Paint quite good too? The K-Paint
I have no idea. I've never loaded it.
They call it nowadays, but...
Resident KDE fan in not using K-Paint, shocker.
Buff.
And that's all the news.
It's now time for the Hot Topic, which this week is the result of our... It's very difficult to get enthusiastic about it. It's the result of our Bing experiment, where we used Microsoft's search engine and other online products to invigorate and excite and dynamically calibrate our working environment. So, guys, you're both smiling. All three of you are smiling at me. I mean, I know we've had a good time.
There's sound
been many
of
laughs. Yeah, been many jokes. You know,
I've switched to Bing.
Paul has switched to Bing.
And it has nothing at all to do with the Windows Ultimate 7 on a quad-core i7 that MS sent me in the post. Right? I'll just leave this here, they said.
It's that rain cloud that follows you around. Bong.
The thing that strikes me about Bing is that they've not really tried to be different. The colours are the same as Google. The layout's the same as Google in the results. And yet,
that's not such a bad thing. I mean, the fact is that we're all programmed to... recognize Google. I mean, that it took me a lot of time to get used to the fact that it's all kind of tabbed in by one tab. All the results is like they're secondary results. I want things over on the far left.
But then there's no incentive to use it. If they tried something different, then there might be something that you like. I think that's unique.
I did
to Bing.
Point that out to them when they came, because before Bing launched, Microsoft came to talk to the teams here to show Bing off to the world and encourage everyone to give it a try. And I explained, why is it your results page looks color-wise exactly like Google, and your ad links look just like Google.
Yes, exactly.
And they said, well, that's the standard for internet nowadays. And it is, because Google made it the standard.
Did Tim Berners-Lee invent that or something?
Well, we tried a few of their technologies out, and starting with the search engine. How did you find it? How did you find it, Mike?
Worse search results than Google, basically. It's not bad. It's still better than Hotbot or whatever, remnants of the internet around.
Don't you just use Alta La Vista?
it is actually Alta Vista level, isn't it, in terms of technology. It's not reading meta tags or anything, but it's not far off.
Yeah, it's not great, but it would, in the horrible event that Google's data centers went down, then it would be tolerable.
I guess. I mean, as you know, I started making a list of really crappy results provided by Bing when I compared them against Google at the same time. And I stopped making the list after just a couple of days because there was too much to even mention in the podcast. I mean, there are so many places where it's inferior, and I'm surprised. I'd think they'd get that right, or closer to right, or better in some places, but I don't think there was a single result that was better than the Google equivalent.
That's the hardest problem, I think, to solve. Because Google has taken a lot of flack from various sites over the years, because when they update their search algorithm, some sites go off the top 10.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the search results, the visitors collapse. And so Google has tweaked their algorithm many, many times over the years to add things. And MS hasn't had that time yet.
It is. It's lacking intelligence. For example, I searched for Little Big Planet PSP review. Bing came up with, this is after the release last week or the week before, Bing came up with a Eurogamer story on PSP game coming soon, where Google actually linked directly to the GameSpy review. Search for Lug Radio Live 2009. It's way down the list in Bing. Google jumps directly to the top page. There's too many examples. Skype Debian package in Bing. It was on the second page.
Really?
Yeah, on Google it links directly to the package in the first hit. The Great Boot Race, suspiciously, isn't in the first page of results.
That's our TouchRadar video of comparing Windows boot times with Ubuntu, isn't it?
And despite the fact that YouTube videos are included in the results, so...
Yeah, I mean, certain things you see on Google, Wikipedia entries for something, and YouTube videos, something, especially if they're official, come up quite high up. You can type a name of a song into Google... And quite often, a YouTube official video of it will be there. So it turns into a big jukebox.
Well, it's a bit of a shame because on Bing, the videos are very cool. I showed you great. Yeah, you can hover over and it starts playing straight away from within. So you can hover over a few, choose the one you want, and then click on it. But the problem is, YouTube's listed it as a contender in the wider mix of crappy video sites. You know, there are so many out there, and YouTube stands far ahead of the way as being the best one. And sometimes, one of the examples they gave from the Bing homepage, they have these little links, was... going to Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby. Click that, you get various hits. YouTube, with the official video from EMI, was number 10 or so, number 11. That's with the official video on YouTube. Yeah. The biggest site from the biggest people is not the top hit. And is that their search thing being crap? Probably, because it's Microsoft software. But it's disappointing. They should work harder to make that higher.
Maybe it's just Microsoft supporting the little guy.
Maybe.
You know,
it's not what I want. You know, it's not the result I want.
No.
So I'm not going to use it. I mean, you actually quite liked it. I mean, Paul mentioned the rollover videos. They're really nice.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
I really like the bird's eye maps. There was one a few
days ago. Great. Yeah.
Was it the Falkirk Canal thing a few days ago in the UK?
Yes.
Oh, the wheel.
Yeah. You only see it in... you get country-specific hits. So again, the MS guy said, we are paying people to enter data specific to countries. So pictures are local, search results are local. There's shared things like... when there are like Wimbledon's taking place, they'll enter the results by hand as they happen. When you search Wimbledon, you get the results straight away.
Yeah.
And you think, well, how are they going to pay that? They've got a staff of 30 in the UK alone. Well, if you look at the money Google makes, clearly if you get it right, it pays for itself pretty damn quickly.
Yeah.
So I can see what they're doing. But that kind of thing. So the Falkirk wheel was a UK picture. And it said, look at this awesome picture. It's a beautiful shot of the wheel thing. And you click a link to it and it goes straight to the aerial view and you can see it again from a different angle and it looks incredible.
Yeah, just to be clear, if you go to Google Maps satellite view, it's pretty much always directly straight down from the top. So you don't get a sense of how big buildings are. But with Bing Maps, with the bird's eye view, it's actually at some sort of angle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's optional. You can choose top down or an angle.
Or it's an angle, and that looks brilliant.
And they've obviously just taken the idea from Google. Google made Google Maps.
Mm.
MS copied it. Fair enough. Google made Google News. MS copied it. It's a massive, massive Google ripoff. But there are some ways in which they're improving it. One of which is not search results. The search is terrible on Bing. But the other services are actually quite clever. Better than Google's.
Well, competition in those respects is good.
It's awesome.
Yes. How about you, Andrew? How did you find it?
I forgot to use the Bing search engine. I'm really sorry about that. I just forgot that it's there. There's a little search thing in Firefox.
I think you can find Bing on Google.
Great.
I think I reminded you, didn't I?
Maybe. I don't know.
It made me so angry.
I Hotmail confused me. I sort of ditched Gmail for a while, but all my contacts are on Gmail, and I only get... My Hotmail account is my spam box.
I've written down here, flickery, 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 flickery adverts for Hotmail.
I hate times.
I hate them.
Yeah. Hotmail's pretty grim. Particularly, I mean, I sent an innocuous email to Andrew here, and he said it was full of kisses, and it was. I know it's important to have some male bonding in these podcasts, but there were no kisses in my email, I'm afraid, to break it down to you.
You can get your arm off now.
And also, in a good idea doesn't work. We write an email, a tab appears on the right-hand side saying, do you want to drop anything in?
That's an awesome idea.
It is. You can type movies, you can type photos, whatever, and it'll search for those things. You can click on it, like, you know, Michael Jackson, this is it. Click on that. It'll show movie times locally to you. It doesn't do that. If you click on it, it goes, no results found. Even though it's listed on the homepage as being one of the suggestions for your area, was this is it.
Yeah, movies, yeah.
Doesn't work. So it may work if you've got, like, you know, Internet Explorer 8 or something like that, but not on my Firefox. So
I just can't live for the adverts. I can't. I never could, you know. It's what put me off webmail-based services for years and years and years. It was only Google's mail that kind of convinced me a little bit.
Agreed, yeah.
What's the... in Hotmail, it says that you three have all been added to my network. What does that mean?
Oh,
I don't think I consciously did it.
No, it just means that we can...
Bond,
yeah.
So you did send the kisses.
No, I think it's Messenger. We can chat using, like, the Gmail chat ripoff they've made.
All right.
It's so much of it is just ripoffs of Google stuff and then tweet, and that is obviously what MS excels at. And they've done it very well, I've got to admit. Apart from the actual core thing, which is search results, the rest of it works really, really well. And I guess they could fix the search results over time, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. So, overall, with the exception of search results, not a bad experience, and the exception of mail. And I don't like their instant messenger. Their instant messenger client on Windows just sucks.
Oh, yeah. I haven't used it in ages, but...
It has adverts, doesn't it?
Yeah, adverts. I mean, I do use MSN chat through Copete or Pigeon
but
or whatever.
But fortunately, it's not installed anymore by default. In Windows 7, it's an optional extra. Don't unload the internet. Yeah. An 800 meg package of tat from Microsoft.
Yeah, it's like the live essential package.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got to admit, I think if I were Google, I'd be worried. Because they can fix the search algorithms over time. They've got this huge database of results. They just tweak the algorithm again and again and again until they get it right. And people, I've got to admit, I prefer the Bing homepage. I've got a fat 24 meg broadband connection in my house dedicated to me. I don't need a simple 5K Google logo. I'd like more. And every day I wake up, turn on Bing, and I, when you hover over the picture, different every day, you get little squares that tell you just little factoids, random factoids, about this area or things near it.
That's cool.
And I sit and read them all in the morning.
But you see, it's very easy for Google to do exactly the same.
It's not easy for Microsoft to do the same. Then Google's playing catch-up with Microsoft.
No, that would take Google a day to implement.
And a huge amount of pride to implement.
Yeah, look, I don't know about the pride thing, but it's Microsoft can't leapfrog Google on its search results. It's always going to be chasing. I can't see them actually innovating to a point where we're all going to say, you know what, I might try that search in Bing because it might come up with something clever.
They don't have to innovate, do they?
I think they do. Otherwise, well, no, they don't because it's the default search on their operating system.
No, in Europe it's selectable. The thing is, they're not required to innovate. They're just required to copy. If the results are like 5% worse than Google, people would happily use Bing. There's things
or
like
not
the,
switch,
the
yeah.
Bing cashback thing, yeah. They need an incentive to switch to Google, and if there isn't one anymore, they're not going to do it.
Well, there's enough incentive for us, I think. But yeah, maybe Mike's mum and dad will stick with Bing.
Yeah, exactly. We still need the best results, because often I'm on page 3 or 4 or 5 trying to find the exact thing I'm looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, yeah. And
my search terms are often 8 or 9 words long. I'm very precise, whereas other people, I admit, aren't. And they'll be happy with Bing right now. And it only get better with time. And that's a worry for Google. Google have to do something to improve. And maybe Wave's the answer. Maybe Chrome OS is the answer. I don't know. But leaving it as is not the answer, because MS are going to carry on copying until they get it right.
Yeah, I'm not worried. They've copied and tried to get things right with the Zune, and it's still, you know, completely minuscule compared to Apple. There's some things that are just fixed now. Well, Google is search. Yeah. Apple is iPod, is music.
So let's wait for Live 360. Or, you know, Bing 360. Because Xbox One was a complete failure.
Mm.
360 has sold more than the PS3. They've managed to take down the leader in one generation.
They've done it in the console market, yeah.
But by throwing something like $3 billion at it.
But how much money have they put into music players? You know, I'm just wondering, there's some markets they might simply just not be able to get into. They clearly can't do anything against Apple's dominance in music players. So
yeah,
maybe the same thing will happen in search.
Apple's a larger thing there, isn't it? Apple has things like the music store always as well.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to get into, I agree with that. But search they can do, I think. Search is within their power.
No.
Okay, well, how about we place a bet?
Okay, yeah, sure.
So, Bing, I think Bing market share will have gone up this time next year.
Market share will have gone up?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a pretty easy bet for you.
There you go. So what are you thinking then?
What? 1 to 2%?
No, I think we've got to think medium term where we say Bing's got a 40% search share in 4 years.
That's unlikely.
Well
Google's got 60%. And that's, you know, the world's largest search engine.
Is that all?
Yeah, it's all it's got, yeah. It's not big.
Wow, Google are rubbish. Because they don't know what they're doing.
Where's the other 40% coming from?
Yahoo? Bing? Bing's got 12% already. Mm. Bing is it 12, 15% already?
Bing's only got 2% on the macOS website.
Yeah, what's the, yeah. And yeah, Bing gives us hardly any results on TuxRadar as well. Mm.
Okay, let's say Bing breaking the 20% barrier.
In 5 years?
What's a reasonable term? What's the length? Will we all be here? No, we won't be here in 5 years. Let's say in 12 months' time.
We'll be here in 5 years.
Welcome to episode 844.
12 months' time.
12 months' time, 20% market share. That's quite a jump, but across all websites, not just like Linux websites.
Yeah, okay.
All right, I'll take that bet. Go on.
Okay. you heard it here, folks.
Unless Google does something drastic, I think it's going to happen. Because MS will just keep throwing money.
Okay. Okay. I think I'm safe.
I think I'm safe.
No, you.
And with such hardcore gambling action, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week and our open ballot, which is also Bing related. Us take money from Microsoft? Never. If some big sites were paid not to use Google, would you switch?
Now it's time for Discovery of the Week.
Yay!
Woo! This is my favourite bit.
I look forward to Discovery of the Week all fortnight. I've got two Discoveries of the Week, but I'm going to hold it back because
is that allowed?
It is allowed. Still got. There's precedent.
Two as well.
A precedent has been set. In that case, let's start with the losers who only have one Discovery of the Week.
That's me.
Mike, what have you found?
I found this awesome package, this library. It's called Lib. Gwen Hewy Far 47. That's GWENHYWFAR. Apparently, it's a multi.
Welsh princess.
It's a Welsh princess.
I think so. Historically,
it's a multi-platform helper library for networking and security applications and libraries. A helper library for libraries. The thing is,
what libraries like in the high street that loan out books?
I was installing Ubuntu and I was watching the packages fly by, as you do, and I saw this come up, and I just thought, this is ridiculous. One of the things we criticise about Windows is, if you try and fix a Windows machine, you open up the task manager, and you see all these random named programs that you can't understand whatsoever. You think, what is that? You know, some random exe.
svhost.exe, that's all it is.
But you come across all sorts of stuff, and you know, that's bad. Things should make sense. Things should have at least a bit of description in the name. So if you're trying to admin a Linux box and you come across libgwenhuifar 47, you think, what does that do? It's stupid. It doesn't help anybody.
So do you not think that people should be allowed to name packages in their own language?
No.
Are you forcing cultural homogeneity?
No, I don't think it's a Welsh word. I think it's the name of a Welsh historical person. It's like, you know, Lib Arthur.
Right.
Lib Merlin.
But if Lib Arthur was
exactly
was a
we,
package based exactly, on
yeah,
kingship, then that's
we
then
recognise
that would be cool.
The link historically with our thing. He doesn't recognise a link because he's not Welsh.
He should be Welsh.
I'm trying my best, but
Tabeth Key declared.
Yeah, and stuff. At the point, I just you know, seeing stuff like that, it just makes the whole operating system more complicated. It just adds more randomness, and I think, you know, name your apps whatever you want, Bing, Firefox, Pigeon, but for system libraries.
That doesn't make sense.
Why?
But do you think the behind
That's
the scenes
a stupid
stuff
thing to say. You're
be,
a stupid
should have
man,
a logical
Mike.
Name.
You're stupid.
No, it isn't.
Surely it should be the other way around. This is cutting edge debate here.
You see those stupid people? That's you, that is.
Paul's in a really good mood today.
All the front end stuff
that
people actually have to use should have sensible names. Because people have to find them and know what it means.
No, because you only...
Whereas at the libraries, they never see. They don't care what it's called. It could be libfart1 for all they care. It doesn't matter.
No, because that doesn't make any sense. Because you use desktop applications every day. It only takes a couple of runs to know that Pigeon is an instant messenger client, that you get that into your head very quickly. No, when you're adminning a machine,
people have to sort of go through and say, what does this do? Pigeon, no idea, it's not that one. Evolution, no idea, it's not that one. To find the thing they want to do.
Yeah, but like I say,
libraries, if people know what it does.
You only do that once. If you're adminning a Linux machine, you won't, it's only rare that you're going to come across certain packages. And if they're named like libgwinwefar, then...
What do you? How do you come across? How do you come across it? What's this package I've just found in DPKG? What could it be? I'll find out and Google the internet or Bing the internet to find out what it does. No one ever does that.
Well, I did.
You watch crap scroll by to feel elite for 5 minutes.
If you had a problem with your machine and this library, you know, was causing some problem, then
it's a helper library. It helps.
It's a helper library. All right then. We should name libraries more obscurely to make Linux easier, well, says Paul.
It's not free software. If it's only free, if name them the way you'd like them to be named.
All right, I've completely changed my mind on this. I think libraries should have really obscure names because I'm sure that makes things simpler.
What are you going to do to atone?
To atone what?
For your wrongness.
I'm going to stop using Linux. That's it. I've heard that OS X's quite good.
Graham.
Well,
you're wrong.
How do I follow that? my discovery of the Fortnite isn't mine. It was sent to me by Alison Pitt, who had read the iCandy cover feature in Linux format and sent me a link to a really cool application called Conky, Conky. It's when you look at the website to start off with, it looks like just another system monitor. It's looks pretty crude, and it sits on the root window on the background of your desktop, and it shows you things like CPU usage and memory usage and network usage and all the usual stuff. But it's amazingly configurable. You can script it using the Lua scripting language. You can there's up to 300 built-in objects you can add to that, the main application. And the kind of things people have done with Conky are incredible. In fact, Alison herself sent me a couple of links to her desktop, and it looked really smart. It looked really nice. She had it actually looked part of the desktop background. There was a clock and a simple CPU monitor, and using Cairo, because Cairo is built into it as well. It's probably the best system monitor I've ever found.
And there are so very many of them.
There are great, and I don't actually use any of them, but it's cool. I think it's great.
So do you actually understand now why people want to have these data things on their desktop? I mean, like CPU fan speed, I don't really want to know.
I kind of run a CPU monitor, that's about it. But
is it the Doom Face one?
It's only so that I know that Chrome has crashed and I have to restart it.
But that it runs with Cairo is quite cool.
Yeah, and that means that despite the fact that it looks really simplistic by default, if you look in the forums, if you look at Ubuntu forums, for example, people are sharing their configuration files, and it can just change it from being a very simple text-based system monitor to something that's purely graphical and rendered really nicely in Cairo.
Sweet.
No dissent.
But it looks like we've got a few minutes left, so we might have time to squeeze in some contributions from Paul. What?
I found a game. Taking Mike's part. It's a great game. It's for the iPhone. There's a hint.
Is this allowed under broadcasting impartiality?
Doesn't matter. It's called Brain Party. I made it. Go buy it. Anyway, it's called Brain Party. Buy it or I kill you. My actual discovery. I'm going to open source it. I've already given it to someone.
What, as mono?
No, C++. Oh, anyway, okay. Brain Party. 59p. Love it. My actual discovery was posted to a feature we wrote on Tux Radar recently, command line tricks for smart geeks. And the tip, we made a couple of mistakes in this article, so we always do, just to keep you guys on your toes. And the same response posted by 10 or so different people. And I get the point, guys. Can't you just say what he said or just not say anything? We already know. It's quite simple. When you are using tar, if you've got a BZ2 file or a GZ file, you don't have to type XVF followed by Z or J, Z or J if you're American. You can just type tar XVF because it figures it out. Now, my muscle memory makes me look at Z or J every single time, and obviously I'm wasting functionality here, which is silly. You don't need to do it. You can just do without it, and tar figures it out on itself.
But is that just GNU tar?
Yes, it's the newer version too.
GNU tar, so it might not work you FreeBSD users out there.
Yes, all one of you.
Oh, sorry, that was the discovery?
That was the two, yeah.
Awesome, yeah.
Cool.
Well, Brain Party's pretty good. It's very good.
I've heard it's rubbish.
Well, you're wrong. It's got 16 five-star ratings on the App Store.
Dude. All completely random people as well.
99 cents, you can't go wrong.
P. Hudson says...
Lol, I loved this game.
A. Hudson says... I got an email from... Well, I didn't... The anonymous facade of LXF letters... received an email from Levi Ustinov, bringing my attention to www.bitelove.com, which is a shop. I should say that other shops are available. They sell cool, geeky stuff on the internet. And, you know, he reckons that the best thing on there is this World of Warcraft t-shirt, which I don't understand because I don't really get World of Warcraft.
Some game, I think.
But there's also a shower curtain that looks like the periodic table of elements.
That's really good.
Isn't that ace? So there you go. I'm sure Graham
will... What was it? Bitelove.com. Bitelove.
But I'm sure Graham will put up a link to it in the podcast notes.
I think we have the technology to do that.
On the interweb.
Is it in the UK?
What, the internet?
I don't... the shop.
Oh, things are mostly in euros. So I don't know...
So it's not
I really want to buy Think Geek stuff, but they charge a lot of money to ship to the UK, plus duty when it gets here. So it gets very expensive to buy Think Geek stuff.
I think it's in the Euro land.
Right.
So postage will still be quite dear.
But there's no duty.
But there's no duty.
I'd like it if the periodic table was hidden until it got wet.
And then it appeared.
Oh, I'd like it if there was a special periodic table that appeared like when it changed, when it got hot, like those global hypercolor things.
Or just or H2O. Those... Just H2O appears in red.
Or when you got like all the parabens and plasticizers and minging stuff from your shampoo and stuff, when that got on there, that showed up all the elements. Anyway, my second discovery is a story that I found on Tech Radar. It's from July this year. Techradar.com. These are our colleagues who post all sorts of stuff about technology.
Before we continue, are you going to make fun of them?
I would never do that.
Good. Just carry on.
Some of my closest friends work on Techradar.
Awesome. That's good to know.
Headline. I could probably just read all this out, can't I? Because, you know, the copyright's all owned by Future.
Yeah, these guys can wait, you know.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, the headline. Google promises the end of viruses. Engineering director claims Chrome OS will finally defeat malware. Awesome.
Wow.
There's, you know, Google's engineering director apparently said back in July that Google would, with its Chrome OS, would end viruses and would be living in a shiny, happy land where there were no viruses or viri.
And Bill Gates once promised that spam would be eliminated as well.
Well, just, I think, isn't it cool? You know, how great would it be to have an operating system where you didn't have viruses?
It's amazing.
So
yeah.
I'm
it's the future.
Totally going to throw my weight behind Chrome. And
hooray.
And thanks for Tech Radar for bringing that to our attention.
Thanks, Tech Radar.
Cheers.
And with such utterly unveiled sarcasm, we come to our open bat, which asks the question, if Microsoft were to pay some sites to avoid using Google, would you switch to Bing? We've had lots of responses on the internets, and they've all been no.
Surprisingly.
Which I find very curious, because Mike put the post up. He said, would you switch to Bing? Would you stay with Google? And the answer was no.
To be fair, we do normally say we want a yes or no
answer.
To
be fair, that is a Mike fail. That's a double
fail. John
Vile.
No. There you go. Gentlemen, what do you think? What's your considered opinion?
I definitely would, yeah. After what I said before.
Would what?
I'd switch to Bing.
Right.
Because, you know, if they have better search results, then that's all I'm interested in.
Well, since when does Murdoch News constitute better search results? That's more...
Well, he used to own a share in this company, and I've got a lot of respect for what he does. I think the fact that he thinks that there's too much free stuff on the internet is right. You know, and really, I don't like other people being able to read The Sun for free. I want to feel like I'm valued, and I don't mind paying £3.99 a week to be able to read The Sun headlines and skip straight to page 3.
Brilliant.
So,
I can't tell if I was joking or not.
Hang on. You go to the internet.
Yep.
and you search for example, boobs, but you don't get, in Google, you don't get the page three result from the sun, but you do get everything else.
The way Google works is that the top hits are images and news. So if something has happened right now about emperor penguins, being a news story, emperor penguins, the news story will come higher than the first hit for the first Google page. Now, obviously, people like to click the first thing. That's what we know. So if there is a news story on Google about emperor penguins, they'll go there. So it drives traffic to the emperor penguins news story on whatever site that's from.
Right. Okay. And so what sites are paying?
This is all just...
Who's paying?
This rumor right now that News Corporation might pay, might be paid by Microsoft to remove its sites from Google. So any search for news will not find any News Corporation news on Google.
But you'll still get The Telegraph,
you'll still get The Guardian,
and The Mirror,
other sites.
Well, in that case, I'll stick with Google, thanks.
And that's what everybody else
says. Well, yeah, but the thing is, I see it as very interesting because...
Actually, I'd pay to have my Google searches cleansed of some...
Agreed.
Yeah, certainly some people agreed with you. But I think it's very curious because not only would The Guardian see a huge rise in traffic because no one's going there from Google anymore, they're going to the other sites from Google, they go to The Guardian instead. But it does make it very clear that Murdoch's sites, and he's owned a lot of sites with a huge number of page impressions every day, are not making enough money from the internet. And they want to put a paywall up, which means you can't get to the content in the news without paying $1 a month or $1 every week, or whatever it costs. But if MS pays enough to them to make money from the internet, then they're onto something. They're actually making more money than The Guardian. Because the problem with The Guardian is they have to pay a large chunk of bandwidth for their costs. Okay? And if it costs X to have some users come in, and they make Y back, which is less than X, doesn't matter how many users they get, they're always losing money. They're losing money faster. If they get four times users, doesn't matter, they're still losing money. If those users don't click enough adverts, they're still losing money, just faster. So it doesn't really matter about how many numbers get driven to them, it's how much money they get from it as a result. So if Bing agrees to pay them, you know, $10 million a year, and that's enough to satisfy the Sun's costs, they're making more money than what they would have done. It's been a great success, and therefore, as a result, I think other sites will switch too.
I think it's quite a wily idea. I think Rupert Murdoch, it's quite clever. Once again, I think it's Microsoft. If it happens, it would be Microsoft's usual approach to winning and trying to win, and that's really depressing.
If you went to SkyNews.com, which a lot of people use as their homepage for news. Went there and said, okay, please pay your $3 to get access to the site. Or if you're a Bing user, you get in free. That's what it would be. Ooh, that's what it would be.
That's interesting.
Bing would pay a subsidized cost of it. And people use Bing. That's what the deal would be.
One of my Twitter feeds is, I can't remember, it's like the National Geographic or something like that. Anyway, it's all paid for content. And I never click on the link, despite even when the story's interesting and I mistakenly click on the link. As soon as I realise it's paid for, I'm not bothered. Yeah. If I'm bothered, I'll make a note and Google it later on from some other source.
Well, you say that, but I remember a lot of folks used to pay for the New York Times.
Yeah.
That was paywalled, and obviously it stopped being paywalled.
But it was a fail, but yeah.
It was fail, yeah, but that's because everyone was going free, and now people are kind of pulling back from that because they're not making enough cash.
I think for us as technology kind of people, the news is more to do with what other people are creating. I'm not so interested anymore in especially what Sky has to say. You know, and I partly pay for the BBC news coverage, and I'm happy to just keep seeing that.
Yeah. It certainly explains James Murdoch's rant about the BBC a few months ago, about why they shouldn't be allowed to give away that stuff for free.
Yeah,
Because as a result, people would just go to BBC News more, because it would remain free.
Yeah. I do think that the levels that the BBC take are extraordinary, with the iPlayer development. Just an advert for kids, a kids' version of iPlayer, for watching all their CBBC stuff. It's amazing, actually, that we're paying for all that. And I might be a little bit annoyed if I'm a competitor in the field.
Yeah. So Hugh said, Microsoft and News Corp, or Google, the phrase Morton's Fork springs to mind.
You're going to have to explain it.
I'm sure Andrew can.
No, I can't. I'm thinking of the Cordine Forks, but that's nothing to do with this.
You'd be wrong. Morton's Fork was based on a stupid tax law from many moons ago. I wrote it down here, it's from the 15th century.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, is this another one of those things you told me, but I've forgotten?
maybe a huge library of things. Basically, if you lived in luxury, you obviously had enough money to pay your taxes. If you lived frugally, you obviously had enough savings to pay your taxes. So either way, you're going to pay taxes. I think you say it's not a good choice either way. JD said, I've tried Bing and it seems to be filtered. It gives me very rubbish results, open source and Linux related stuff. It also seems that when you enter a search term like Microsoft sucks, you don't get the sort of results you might expect. Which is strange. I tried that search. It returned Microsoftsucks.org as the first hit.
All right.
In fact, typing Microsoft is brings up the suggestion box. And the first one is Microsoft is evil as the first suggestion on Bing.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think that's too unfair. It probably is filtered in some ways, but not in that way, I think.
Well, the Great Boot Race result was a bit weird, I thought.
Maybe, yeah. What do you do, Mike?
I absolutely love this this business model. I think this is business model 3.0, paying people to do something different. I want Burger King to start paying me to stop going into McDonald's. I love it.
That'd be expensive for them,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. this is great.
It could actually be anti-competitive, couldn't it? I mean,
just a bit.
Yeah, but I mean, in Europe, I mean, yeah, it's likely to get Microsoft in trouble. So,
I think it sums up the problem that company has. What can we do? How are we going to fix this? Mm. Let's just throw more money at something. If I was a Microsoft shareholder, I'd be quite concerned. I'd be,
No, you'd be thinking this is great. This is the way in. This is
yeah. They've got stacks of money.
Yeah, but I can't see it ultimately being fruitful. I'd want more R&D. I'd want more innovation going on. Not just how are we going to deal with this? Give them money. How are we going to deal with that? Give them money.
I think Vista proved, if anything, that Microsoft isn't very good at innovation.
Mm.
They are experts at copying. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But innovating, not so much. And, I think this is a great example. Just throw money at it. And because they've got so much money, they can just keep on throwing money till it works.
Yes, if it eventually works.
If it eventually works, yeah. Well, that's it with Xbox. It lost, I think, 3 or 4 billion or something crazy. But now it's making money.
But as you mentioned, yeah.
And, is it Modern Warfare 2? Made, I think, $500 million of sales.
The 360 is a good console.
It is, yeah, it is.
And it's not the same as Windows or their search engine. I think the 360 is a good console.
And with that, more Microsoft love, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget, all the notes are
I think I see what's going on here.
The website?
All my recent one more things have been questions, haven't they? They've been questions to challenge your geek status.
Was that your one more thing?
There's going to be a one more thing. But Paul's trying to rush ahead because I don't think he can answer this. But let's try. If you call yourself all Linux geeks, or GNU/Linux geeks, then...
I'm a herd geek.
It's funny you should mention herd, because you obviously love the herd, having run the herd live CD, Andrew. What was the original name of the GNU kernel before it became herd?
Was it Allison?
Very, very close. This is impressive.
Wow, Andrew.
Fail. Well, if anybody else can get any closer...
Alice?
No.
Ali?
No. It's actually Alex. The original name was Ali.
It was named after a girl that Stallman fancied in his youth, wasn't it?
Correct, yeah. I don't need to.
Isn't Alex a boy's name?
Well, apparently...
it was himself.
Stallman was Richard Stallman, the creator of GNU, was interested in this lass. And she had joked that because her name ended in X, that somebody should name a kernel after her. So... Richard Stallman being the loving guy that
like
he is.
An interesting kind of girl.
She was a Unix system administrator, and RMS fancied her, named a kernel after her. They went their separate ways, and he changed the name to Herd, which was not based on a girl, or Douglas Herd. So, yes. There you go.
Interesting.
And with such lightning insight, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget, the notes are indeed on our website. And you can tune in 2 weeks for more awesome One More Things. See you then. Bye.
Bye.